Have you seen the ghost picture up there at coasttocoastam.com from Alcatraz? Take a look at that. Unbelievable. Hey, by the way, John Rhodes, kind enough to stick around another hour for us because so many people were on hold waiting to talk with him. We're going to get into your calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Back with your calls. We're going to go to John Rhodes and you in just a second with your calls. John, geographically, do you live in any specific region in the country because of your work?
Yes, I do. I moved from the western part of Montana down to the southern, one of the two southern entrances of the Yosemite National Park here in central California, just northeast of Fresno in the Sierra foothills. And it is here where I had heard of reptilian humanoid sightings along the Merced River in the hills here, as well as other types of phenomenon occurring, including triangles, craft sightings, tube craft sightings. And there's a lot of limestone and sandstone, or mostly limestone around here, so there's a lot of cavern areas up in this region. And it's up near Yosemite National Park, which is beginning to be a bigger and bigger interest to me as far as the type of phenomenon that goes on in the park, including and not limited to, of course, missing persons,
which has
been a subject that's come up lately.
Yep.
of very importance. And, when we're looking up here, you're looking at an area in which there's so much phenomenon sometimes occurs that it's either, it can be in a local newspaper or it can be mentioned amongst locals. There have been multiple eyewitness sightings of small fleets of small craft. There were spheres flying over a mountain here, it was at a birthday party, and I spoke to the person whose party it was. And at the same time, a call was called into the sheriff's dispatch about anomalous lights from another location. Called it in on the same mountain ridge that was occurring. Apparently, these things were flying around in a very playful pattern, observing something low in a valley. I have to admit also, it is an area in which I had my own personal black triangle sighting a number of years ago. And it led me into an area of research because when it occurred, I was in an area called Ahwahnee outside of Oakhurst. And this is in the region of the United States in which all the gold rush started. You know, Mariposa, my town, actually had the first courthouse in California. There's a lot of Masonic mysteries going on here, including, for example, like the new and the old Masonic Lodge are aligned in a straight line through an obelisk in the front of the first courthouse that has a pyramidal obelisk that has a crystalline structure on the top. And if you were to draw a straight line north, you would notice that the new lodge is exactly at 33 degrees off center. So there's little mysteries that I like to follow up on. But at the same time, these bigger mysteries like the reptilian humanoid sightings and the wilderness out here really do have grabbed my attention. I've always felt in my life, if I'm really not living on the beach anymore, because I've done the New York City life and such, if I'm not living on the beach, I want to be up in the mountains near the wilderness, and I want to be able to explore some mines and some caves. And a large part of what I do isn't just going out there looking for these creatures and looking for evidence, or at least trying to attract sightings of UFOs through different methods, but also enjoying the gold fields of California, because there is gold out there in those mountains.
Gold and treasures.
And treasures, yes, absolutely. Joaquin Marietta's treasure supposedly was buried between here and a town up north. So, the treasure lore is rich up here as well. So, I've always felt if you have a choice in life to do anything, at least get yourself out and get yourself into nature. Don't be sitting down too much in your life, as little as possible. And really, that the phenomenon is really Keelian, like John Keel, the late researcher, used to say, when you take a personal interest in it, somehow something takes a personal interest in you, and you become a magnet at that time for different things to happen in your life. And when they do, they change you. They change your character because you're exposed to some of the great mysteries that people have talked about in ancient traditions with meditation. Or when you hear about the ancient legends, you saw a reptilian humanoid, or you saw a gray. Now you can identify with the Hopi Indian that may have come in contact with that Ant-Man.
Let's go to the phones, John. What's starting by going to first-time caller Matthew in Alabama. Matthew, thanks for holding so long. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Matt. Good, thank you.
I guess y'all know I'm a first-time caller, so just bear with me.
You got it.
But, you know, y'all were talking about the strange story about the 9-foot shark and the tracking device being found and all. My theory is, and I get this from your encyclopedia, that they sold from door to door when I was growing up back in the 60s. They're very thorough, and I know that whales, I think it was a whale, and whales, what they do out in the open of the wide sea open area, they circle around a giant school of fish, and they create a whirlpool, and they're able to go very deep and go straight up and swallow every bit of that.
You're right. Would a whale eat a shark, John?
Usually not. I mean, there have probably been encounters between whales and killer sharks or killer whales or orcas, and which, of course, the orca is the most fearsome of the animals when put to it. I think it's a good idea to be thinking that the other animal certainly did grab this. It had to be large and have to have the strength to pull it down, because I can imagine the dorsal fin energy of a white shark with all its muscles at 9 feet long is probably quite large. So, you know, they're also looking at the possibility it could be like something like a giant Pacific octopus. Sometimes those octopi can get up to 30 feet across and weigh 600 pounds, you know, and they're with their beaks, they have been known to attack sharks. And if there may have been a possibility that some deep ocean octopus, like the large ones, actually was skirting up along the rim of the continental shelf and encountered the great white. Now, whether it was on a feeding hunt or whether or not it was a territory dispute between two animals, either one would have ended up in the death of one or the other, most likely. And obviously, I think it did for the shark. But as far as the whales are concerned, I'm not sure. It would regurgitate the shark, I would imagine. Some of the larger whales would regurgitate the shark. We also know that tracker that it had on it, there's something that's not being said or mentioned, is that some of these tracking devices are emitting electronic signals that underwater carry for some distance that actually may aggravate other life around it.
Yeah, but if you're stuck in your stomach, what are you going to do about it?
Well, yeah, or pinned to your dorsal fin or something like that. You can't do it. I mean, the tagging device itself may be disrupting other animals' communications, and it could be disturbing other animals. And we don't know enough about that. There's been studies about sonar technologies of the U.S. Navy and their effects on the ocean wildlife. And a number of years ago, I remember in the Bahamas they were doing testing, and certain different types of dolphin washed up on the shores dead, and under the necropsy, which is like an autopsy for an animal, they found that they had burst eardrums and they had hemorrhage inside their brains. So this type of thing could be at play too, in order to kind of disrupt deep ocean life. You know, you got to ask, what's causing these things to come up to the surface? It seems like there's been a lot more oarfish, the big long serpent-like things that seem to be washing up on the beaches, and they're usually very deep ocean predators or ocean fish. So you kind of wonder what's going on. We know that there's tectonic shifts going on our planet right now.
I was going to say that underwater volcanoes. Maybe
absolutely.
It's too hot down there.
Absolutely. Well, there's with tectonic shifts, you've got pressure. You got quartz and granite under pressure, which equals piezoelectric energy, which is the same thing. If you take two quartz crystals that are rough crystals, and you go into a dark room and you rub them together, you'll actually see them create light by pressing them together. It stinks. It smells like burning hair, but you have to rub them hard together. They're rough surfaces, but they'll release light. It's quite a show to show people. But when Earth does that at very deep levels, that light energy you're perceiving as photons
gets turns into piezoelectric energy potential, and that in itself may be causing disruptions amongst animals at deep levels.
On our wild card line, Jenny is in St. Petersburg, Florida. Good morning, Jenny.
Oh, my God, I'm having palpitations. My brain is spinning with all the topics you've mentioned. And it's like, well, I know about that, and I know about that, and I know about that, and I know about, you know. It's like there is, I don't even think it's a theory anymore. It's a fact that the reason why we're getting more giant squid is because of all of the whaling that killed off so many sperm whale, which was the only natural enemy or predator of the giant squid. And it could be a squid that sucked the shark down, a giant squid, because you'll see sucker marks all over big sharks that live deep.
Right.
Also, I don't think that there's a limit to how big a fish can get. So,
correct.
Consequently, sharks can, who knows how big they can get, which is scary. But I was kind of thinking about, well, gosh, you're making me crazy. The FBI thing, if we're looking at the fact that they told you, well, you know, it's a sign of the devil and just what do you expect? If the theory's correct that aliens and the government are in quote-unquote cahoots, then the FBI, of course, is going to steer you away from that research.
That's an area, Jenny, that I've always doubted. I just don't think there's a working relationship going on.
I kind of agree with you, George. Jenny, you know, I think that a lot of these guys are well-intentioned people who are just normal Joes who have their job, and they're not exposed to most of the very fringe areas regarding this. And their comment to me was, well, when you're dealing with a fringe area, of course, like my other colleagues had said, they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. When I started speaking about this and giving lectures before word started getting overseas about what, you know, new perceptions in America about alien life, and where it may be coming from, they're looking at saying that, you know, this is just an issue that's likely to draw you fire. And with, like I said, my other colleagues, they just wouldn't get anywhere near it. And I understood that. I mean, for myself, people would wonder, well, okay, Mr. Rhodes, you haven't written a book about this subject matter, okay? Even though I pioneered the field, I'm still sitting back watching what's going on, and the time will come when it'll all go down on paper, but until then, it's a learning process of my own. I do cover a lot of areas which, you know, you had mentioned. I don't really claim to know a lot about them. I claim to know a little bit about a lot of things, and I'm a student of everything, and everything mysterious just grabs me by the gut and drives me forward in my life.
Ryan's in San Francisco and now on Coast to Coast. Ryan, thanks. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Thank you so much. I love your show. I listen to it every night. Without it, I think this stuff would be kept secret.
Yes, I think so, too.
Dr. Rhodes, I have a question for you, though. So the Egyptian pyramids, I was thinking about these throughout the night as you were talking about the reptilians. And, you know, we've all heard rumors about, like, you know, time travelers and human beings making the pyramids and all that silly stuff. But basically, I was wondering if, do you think the reptilians built the pyramids? And what's inside of those things? Are the reptilians time travelers from the future? What are they?
You know, I'm glad you're asking this question, because actually it draws back to a question that I had not quite finished with George, which is, where are they coming from? Could they be interdimensional? What's going on? Okay, so we have... just like humans, we are today, so are there physical reptilian humanoids apparently living under Earth's surface in remote remote geological areas and possibly right underneath your very feet. We just don't know. What they appear to be is just natural products of Earth's evolution parallel to ours. Now, there's also the other type of reptilian encounters in which people are having, saying they're extraterrestrial in origin. Now, we might be hearing the reptilians plant a seed of deception there by trying to distract everybody to knowing that they're from Earth rather than keeping them looking off Earth. We can't take their you know, that might be a psi warfare thing where you're just trying to distract everybody. And at the same time, I know that there are legends that kind of intuit that, or I should say suggest, that a long time ago, a group of the reptilian humanoids left Earth to explore space. And when they went to explore space, they were going to be coming back at a time in which Earth goes through natural cycles of devastation, because they feel that why interrupt mankind and put them all through psychological shock? We'll just wait until these great cycles come around when they're all going to be in disruption anyway. And it seems like when you look back through history, even to the Great Plagues, there are all these anomalous UFO sightings and beings that appear on the surface of the Earth that are interacting or observing us going through these disasters. And it might be that they're just doing that so they convince human beings that we're back, so the gods are back, and that's why there's big thunders and earth changes. We can't quite see what's going on there. Now, so there's extraterrestrials, we would think of them, because if they left thousands of years ago, if they seeded other planets, there might be reptilians from other planets, right? And they're from here. Now, what about the interdimensionality thing? Well, again, we're going back to possibly that they, when they engaged in conflict with the original Mars man, there was, and what we call the elves or the Ange elves. This is the Ange El race, the warrior god of Elohim. He was the warrior god, not the Christ god that everybody talks about in the New Testament. He was the Old Testament warrior god. And these guys, when they went into conflict, their only way out and their salvation was to face, they actually change out of phase with our visual reality and find a nearby field in which they could operate but remain unseen to us today. And this is where we get the legends and myths of the djinn, because we're talking about beings who are not physical. They're almost not here. They are actually made of plasma, which is the fourth state of matter. And they work along vortex movement of energy and light, which is usually in a vortex. That's why we associate the djinn with the whirlwinds and the tornadoes or the sand devils.
There's so much going on, John.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. We're two races. We're humans, and we've got these reptilian humanoids or djinn living with us. And apparently they die as well. There's good ones, bad ones. There's some from here. There's some from Europe. Everybody has a region. And we're all in this together. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where this plays out. Now, did they build the pyramids? I think that perhaps the knowledge of the building of the pyramids may have been passed down. There's an idea that perhaps the pyramids themselves are actually energy machines in which they say underneath the pyramids there may have been a magma chamber and a large hole going down into it, and they routed the water from the Nile over to it and put a cap on top of it with a hollow shaft going up through the center. And what this did was the water was reaching the magma, the steam was blowing up to the air through the top of the pyramid, and it was going through different layers of granite rocks, creating a negative ion charge at the very top, like almost like a torus of energy. And out of that steam created a local environment that was very wet. And that's why you have the Sphinx looking like it has thousands of years of rain on it.
John, we're going to come back and take some calls, final calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. Back with John Rhodes, back with your calls. John, based on that being close to Yosemite National Park, David Politis, one of our guests, has so eloquently pointed out the missing people. But he doesn't want to go far enough to tell us what he thinks is happening to them. Have you had any thoughts about that?
Well, I would imagine a certain number of them are just people who have fallen over cliffs and nobody knew they were there and have walked right past them in the months since.
What about a serial killer out there?
Well, they've had killers out here before. You know, it's entirely possible that people come out here thinking that they're going to find foreigners who may or may not have anybody here looking for them, but may not be missing, you know, too much, and that they might be preying on them. You know, there's a lot of areas, just like in the Grand Canyon, for example, that they tell people, you know, don't go into those deep woods, don't go into those deep parts of the canyon, because we may not know you're even there to have to know that you have an emergency to come rescue you. Now, there's also the possibility that there's things that happen in parks that UFO-related things or government-related operations, just like secret government operations enjoy the anonymity of living or working out of an indigenous American Indian reservation here in the United States, which they love to do, whether it's the Navajo reservation or any of the others in Arizona or the Southwest, because nobody can find them. So have they also perhaps gone into the state national parks and in areas in which people don't get to, they've set up shop in those granite mountains. It doesn't make, it's not too far of a reach to think, for example, that in the Sierra Mountains here along the California coast that we've got backup facilities for all the electronics industry down in the valley that one day might be filled in with water from the Pacific or get carpet bombed by the Chinese. You know, most of these American industrial projects and areas always have backup facilities underground.
Well, they sure do. Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Alan in Modesto, California, on the wildcard line. Alan, get us started here. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Pleasure to talk to you. Very long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
I'm in Modesto, and back in the 90s, I was an investigator for MUFON. And we had reports of an underground base up in Merced Falls, which is north of where John is. Mm-hmm. And a guy that wasn't a part of our group kept going up there and trying to find this thing. And at one point, the military police supposedly chased him off, took his ID and everything. Well, he went back again about a week later. 3 days afterwards, he was found dead of suicide under really weird circumstances. Mm-hmm. And we had lots of reports of people seeing stuff and trucks and stuff going in and out and just all sorts of weird stuff up in that area.
Well, that's in the general area. You know, starting to point north of here is like going to Hetch Hetchy Dam. And that area is a high area of suspicion of there being an underground base there and possibly entrances to prior Indian or other species civilizations going underground in those areas. And the idea, there's another thing, too. Fresno is also one of those major stops that have been discovered on the RAND Corporation maps of extreme high-speed bullet trains that go around the United States upwards of 15,000 miles an hour. So there's reasons for Fresno and the location where we are and what might be going on in this area that attracts all kinds of and legitimate government operations as well as the mysterious alien beings who might be spying on those operations themselves.
John, did you ever know the late Philip Schneider?
I'd never met him personally, although I do not support his claims of having worked at Dulce. I know John Lear and those guys, and we've pretty much written off Schneider as one of those fictionalists that came along afterwards. And I'm so sorry that so many people have been caught up in his story, but please keep listening to him and listen to what he says, because things that John Lear was working on and that we were working on during the early 90s, late 80s, were all parts and parcel what Phil Schneider was talking about. So there's aspects of the reality and the truth in what he says.
Brett is in Joplin, Missouri. Welcome to the program, Brett.
Go ahead. Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a Coast Insider, survived the Joplin tornado.
Oh, my.
I had two things to speak of. One is I met a gentleman, a professor, Mac Lyon. He spoke 12 languages, spent 30 years traveling in the Holy Land, studying original transcripts in their original languages, Greek, Aramaic, Arabic, Hebrew, and what you said earlier about it being a snake is totally right. Satan was, it says in the Bible, God's most beautiful angel. And he did not tempt Eve. I'm not going to cross the line here, George. Don't worry.
That's all right.
He did not tempt Eve with an apple. Was not a snake hanging from a tree tempting Eve with an apple. this he appeared in his angelic form, mm-hmm. which he was the most beautiful angel in heaven, which would translate to the most beautiful human on earth. And he, it said he was shiny and sparkled, like scales, shiny scales on a fish or a serpent.
Yeah.
And that's where that came in.
Good point. Sounds somewhat reptilian. Let me just about to ask, and Brian, thank you for that.
Yes, Brian.
Brent, by the way, the devil and his evil, where did that come from, John? Just modern religion made it up?
Yeah, you know, most of the ancient religions never really had, weren't focused on a personification of some evil. I mean, they had it for good things, but it wasn't until modern religions, again, these guys out in those Vatican halls and stuff, they came up with these concepts, we're going to scare the heck out of everybody. And then when they're looking for peace and quiet, they'll come to us. You know, it's this old ego thing of the priesthoods, wanting to put people, okay, you know, you're born of a sin, so therefore you're forever suffering a sin simply because you're born out of fornication. My gosh, it's that type of indoctrination that people are trying to fight against, but the same type of indoctrination that forced us away from the reptilian image. I really believe that when in the Bible, when he said to the serpent that, you know, he's going to create an enmity between the serpent and Eve and her seed and his seed, we're basically talking about some sort of truce that was called between the two parties, and there was a stated separation that they're supposed to have until some sort of future event when we're all supposed to be unified again. And most Christians have got to realize that even when, based on something making a mistake and causing a sin, even a God of Jesus would say, do you have it in your heart to forgive even the original sinner, which or the one who provided you the apple? It would be, could you forgive the evil one? Because everything evil has at least some glimmer of light in it that really wants to become one with the Godhead, but it is just the opposite of the Godhead. It is the antithesis of it. But it always wants redemption. It always wants to come back to the light. But it sees getting things done its way. Evil sees getting things done its way. I don't believe that these guys in the White House are rubbing their hands together feeling that, oh, we're evil. We're going to cause all this war and all this. I don't think they're saying we're evil. We're evil. They're justifying it. Yeah, they're running around with their war reports like Bush was with all these, like, Gentlemen Quarterly exposed at the end of the Bush's campaign there when he said it was a crusade. And then his aides later on turned around and said, no, it's not, no, it's not, when Gentlemen Quarterly showed his war reports that he was handing his officers coming out of the White House. The covers of all the war reports had color images of war and phrases right out of the Old Testament and the Bible justifying their actions, and he was handing this off to his generals. Yet we're supposed to have separation of church and state.
What a mess. Brett, right. Thanks. I participated in that Joplin tornado documentary that came out a couple of years ago when they got walloped by a huge tornado out there, John. Just a horrible situation.
Mother Nature at its worst.
You got that right. Let's go to Kingston, Jamaica now. Rex Munday is with us on the international line. Hey, Rex, go ahead.
Pleasure to talk to both of you. I wanted to mention that Zawi Hawass went down the center of the pyramid, and he found an underground alien base, a huge alien base, and they even found the coffin of Osiris underneath the Great Pyramid. And it's my opinion that the pyramid was used as a nuclear fusion machine to provide energy to the base that was underneath the Great Pyramid.
Might
so
be right.
I happen to agree with John Rhodes on the fact that the pyramids were built by aliens, and that was their base.
Yeah, it was certainly something made to withstand time, and the idea that you have some sort of generation of energy produced by the Nile waters coming into the pyramid itself makes total sense. It sounds like the ancient technologies that produced the Antikythera mechanism or the computer found off the island of Rhodes in the Mediterranean.
In other words, there's degrees of these advanced intelligences that are around us, but the Smithsonian institutions just don't want us to look back in time and say, hey, they were smarter than us.
Chris Dunn thinks the pyramids were power plants, so there could be something to that too, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They might be part of an ancient energy grid system that crosses the Earth and is connected to its natural energy grid that we have, the electromagnetic grid. And there's suspicion that, you know, modern power brokers are actually trying to force a new type of a grid on Earth's surface to generate and to distribute energy that's not according to what the ancient grid was, that other individuals through time have figured out. They've placed it over the Earth, for example, and noticed that a lot of flight formations for UFO activity happen on triangles. And so you start overlying these maps and drawing the lines out, and that's when all of the mysteries start opening up to you.
Michael's in San Diego, and now on Coast to Coast. Michael, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi. You there?
Interesting. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Interesting conversation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks.
John, thank you. You know, I, about 5 years ago, was doing just some doodling, and I later looked at what I did, and I showed the two pyramids, and it was a cylinder that was quite round, maybe 9 feet in diameter, and it would come down through the bottom of or near the big pyramid, and it would go down about 90 feet. And then it went along, and it looked like it came up in the other third pyramid.
Hmm. Well,
so it was just one of those things that you just would know that the dimensions and everything should be. I'll take a photo of the drawing and send it to you.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I have. You can go to my website at reptoids.com and get in touch with me through that, or go to my Facebook page and friends up on me at John Rhodes Crypto Hunter.
Okay, next up, Dave. Thanks for that, by the way, Michael. I'd love to see that picture. Let's go to San Jose, California now, west of the Rockies. It's Greg's turn. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, George, John, thanks for taking the call here.
You are very welcome.
Hey, I was wondering, John, did you hear about that fisherman? I used to live in Orange County. I used to go out to Catalina all the time on my boat, and I heard about the fisherman that caught the world's record, I guess, great white fish. He hooked into it on one side of the island in the evening, and then he had it on line all the way until the morning, the next morning, and it took him all the way around to the other side of the island. It's 26 miles, that island is.
Yeah.
And so I guess it pulled him all the way over on the other side.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I think we may have mentioned the Catalina great white on the offset. Fascinating
story. Yeah, I guess it was like 29 or 31 feet or something, they said it was, or something like that. But it took another fisherman boat to see him fighting this fish, and then they went and helped him, and then they pulled it in, and it was the world record. But, hey, I got a question about that transmitter. Now, if it raised like 30 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever, wouldn't that have to be a mammal to have that go up so much? I mean, could an octopus make that temperature raise? And also, if it was a mammal, can a whale actually dive 2,000 feet?
I can imagine that they can. You know, whales can travel well beyond the depths that humans can travel as far as going down under that kind of pressure.
Yep,
and for
true.
Very long, prolonged periods of time, I might add. As far as, you know, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure, to tell you the truth. We have, when you're looking at something like a cephalopod, you know, like a squid or an octopus, you're looking at something that is mostly, you're going to be thinking, is such a warm animal that's going to have such a warm stomach interior. But when you're thinking of something like a shark, you're getting a little closer to home where it might actually have a warmer environment inside its gut and inside its stomach cavity, especially when you're talking at depth and pressure and how cold it is in comparison to the outside temperatures. So it's a really good question you brought up, and we're not going to really know too much until we find something float up on the beach, maybe, that looks like it has a great white shark carcass in it.
Any Nessie updates, John?
None that I know of. We have, of course, some people claim to have had the satellite image from some app that's a Loch Ness app or something that just picks some sort of movement in the water, but it certainly looks like the bow of a boat. It's a little too symmetrical in shape. It's not, you know, nature doesn't really care too much for symmetry, perfect symmetry. But when you look at it in tracks, and you're looking, especially tracks, you're looking for oddities and symmetry that might actually tell you whether or not you're actually looking at something fake or something natural or not.
All right, next up, let's go to Christopher in San Antonio, Texas. We'll squeeze him in here. Go ahead, Christopher.
Hi, I enjoy the show, and I have a bunch of questions, but I'll just try to squeeze them down really into a very simple question. I'm just excited because this is something kind of fascinating to me. I was wondering if you know anything about the, there's like this creature, it's like an owl lady, and some legends they call her La Llorona or something, but supposedly there was a guy in, there was a guy in Austin, and he was there, and he was in a building, and it tried to get at him, but it couldn't get through the door, and he said, like, she had, like, a beautiful woman's face, but very, like, dark eyes. And my other question I had was kind of, I know you don't have a lot of time, kind of about the Mothman and werewolves. I don't know, I used to have dreams a lot of...
All right, well, let's take Mothman, because we've only got a minute left, John.
Owl woman, start researching Lilith, the legends of Lilith, because she was supposedly Adam's first wife. She was rebellious because she refused to take the submissive position in sexual encounters, and she was like the first feminist, and because of this, she left the garden and supposedly took up residence underneath the oceans in a palace off of India. Now, supposedly, she is associated with, she's known as the screeching owl as well, because you'll see depictions of her having the feathers or the scales around her feet, having owl-like feet, and having the upper body of the owl as well. So that might lead you on to some sort of an exploration which might answer some of your questions about that. Some of these things are products of nature. Others are products of collective imagination built into our psychology, even into our DNA.
All right, my friend. John, always a pleasure talking with you. Good luck in everything you do, all right?
Thank you very much, George. It's always a pleasure.
John Rhodes, The Crypto Hunters, website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, a whole bunch of things we're going to talk about. ESP, geoengineering, what they're doing to our water. We'll be next on Coast to Coast AM.